I think it's hilarious that Cliff Kingsbury is OC at USC, but he's getting calls from NFL coaches for head coaching jobs.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Clay, Clay in 2 years is not going to be able to get a job. Like, what's the best job he could actually get?
San Jose State.
Yeah, something like that, right?
That's exactly the right answer, Ryan, because I was thinking like Mac, but you got to be like semi-accomplished in order to coach at those like weird schools. It's got to be like Mountain West, but like a bad Mountain West. So San Jose State is the most logical choice. Good call.
I think it's kind of funny that Cliff is working for him, and meanwhile everyone just knows, they're like, well, this guy's just bit like waiting in the wings basically.
Well, yeah, that's why they hired him.
he's just auditioning for Urban Meyer this year. That's all he's doing.
Urban Meyer.
Is Urban gonna keep him around next year when he's a USC coach?
Ryan, I am done coaching forever.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, sunny Los Angeles, beautiful.
It's good for the heart.
A little warmer.
You guys don't understand. See, he met with his daughter, and he signed a contract. Who would ever go back on that?
I don't know, the one guy who covered up murderers and rapists as a profession.
The guy who got suspended from like a quarter of his job this year. I mean, he was like, 3 games, it's a big chunk of your season.
I'm a little confused because it sounds like you guys are talking about Ohio State professor of ethics, Urban Meyer, but that can't possibly be the case.
Yeah, associate professor, AD, mentor.
Zach Smith is his TA.
This should just be the start of the show. Who are the guest speakers in Urban Meyer's ethics class?
Art Briles, Bobby Petrino.
Bobby Bowden while you're at it.
I want people who are really, like, proven.
You think Sandusky could get, like, a work release?
Oh, Sandusky.
It is across state lines, so it might be difficult.
Yeah, his ankle bracelet does not allow that. Moving on.
I don't know.
My graduation speaker was Elliot Spitzer, who also gave a speech about ethics. This was 03.
Mine was the fucking Kennedy daughter that talked about ethics and Christian values, and then they found out she was cheating on her husband, too.
You give me 1,000 guesses, and I can't tell you who the hell was at UConn. I was fucked up. There's no way for me to remember. None.
Oh, I slept through most of it. Colleen Sperry had to wake me up for when they called our row.
We got a Sperry reference.
I was next to her from sixth grade through graduating college. Either our lockers were next to each other or we sat next to each other in alphabetical arrangements. Always.
My friend Jolene Zupnik, who also sat next to me for 4 years, passed out on my shoulder during our graduation. I had to like shake her and go, "Wake up, we're graduating."
That's basically what Sperry had to do to me.
Wake up, Z. You got to say that, actually.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, it's so funny. College graduation is supposed to be like one of the highlights of your life, the high points. And I don't know anyone who really thinks of it, you know, reflects on it proudly. Everyone's got the one photo at their parents' house, but no one really remembers taking that photo.
You know, Dan? College graduation's a lot like what we've just witnessed in college football. It's a lot like college bowl season, right? Everyone expects you to show up and care a lot, but really it's just a party and you're there for the whole accomplishment and, you know, really doesn't mean anything. So it's pretty much like a bowl game. I mean, for me, I remember I'm like, okay, I get my diploma. I don't need to go to a ceremony. I don't need photos of this for my applications for jobs, I don't think.
By the way, I graduated high school and college at the same place, the War Memorial.
Oh, yeah, next to Colleen Sperry both times.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And I showed up 10 minutes beforehand with cargo shorts and Birkenstocks on. And I was just like, where do we get this gown shit at? And they're like, we sent it to you months ago. And that was not a good start.
Isn't it funny when you see these college football players or these guys who came from hard circumstances who are so proud of their graduation day? Or you have guys like Larry Fitzgerald who are so proud that they went back to college and got the degree that they do a commercial about it. And meanwhile, all of us who were like basically fortunate enough to be born in a spot where it's like definitely get to go to college, most of the people we grew up with, and we didn't appreciate it not one bit. We're just like, cool. All right, what's next?
Yeah, it was assumed. Now I live in major cities and like it's crazy.
I've worked with so many people without college degrees. It's crazy.
Yeah, me too. I am one of the few who went to college that I work with. It's crazy.
I work with at a bunch of my jobs. I work with non-college grads, but I also know a lot of people around here and friends and other coworkers where it's sometimes it seems weird that I just have a BA, like that I don't have a master's or PhD. So it's kind of a weird middle ground. I feel like I'm going to be the last person left on earth who just has a BA.
That's New England for you.
Pretty much.
Come out here to Arizona. People are like, colleges? What's that? Math?
People hear I have a master's degree, they like think I'm Stephen Hawking.
They're like, master's? Like, how much you make a year? Like a $3 million? I know, it's weird. No, I mean,
you're like, actually I'm way negative in debt. I don't know how this works, but you actually make more than me working the register. Correct. At Del Taco.
Yes, I pay more than you would like to know in student loans per month. That would make your eyeballs bleed, you know.
I just paid mine off in August.
Congratulations.
Finally done. Took 15 years, but I did it.
Horrible.
I'm just the BA.
Ugh. Student loans, the ultimate scam.
Well, that might be a bad or good transition into another college-related financial situation, which is the Take the Points podcast.
Yeah.
Our sports gambling show. We have only one game to talk about this week, and that's the national championship game. But before we get to that, we're going to tie up some loose ends. It's been a couple weeks since we did a show. I am Tom. I'm here in Connecticut. Dan and Ryan are out in Arizona, as previously mentioned. Welcome to the new listeners. What you're going to get in this show is a recap of bowl season, followed by a thorough breakdown of Alabama versus Clemson. And then at the very end of the show, we are going to do something brand new. We are starting the Take the Points College Football Hall of Fame. So we're going to announce the nominees for year one. And then in the next podcast, we will announce the actual inductees who get in. So there's some funny ones. We'll discuss them briefly, but that'll be at the end. First, I'm going to throw it to my co-host, Dan Partridge, who's going to talk about the highlights of bowl season. What did we learn? And what are your takeaways?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Bowl season 2018-2019. A little bit disappointing overall. Don't mean to be a Debbie Downer off the top.
No, it was bad. You can just come out and say it.
It was a little bit lackluster. The matchups from the beginning we knew were not going to be great. The kind of middle of the road teams this year weren't that exciting. Normally there's some, you know, 15th to 25th ranked teams that can put up a lot of points and they're a lot of fun. We didn't really have that this year. Number one thing takeaway from bowl season is it's all about motivation. You really saw in just about every game. That was a little bit of exaggeration, but in a lot of games, the more motivated team, found a way to win. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about every game an example, but I mean, obviously, our UT Texas Horns taking care of business, beating Georgia, looked very motivated. Case in point, Georgia's a better team than Texas. If they play in October on a neutral field, Georgia's going to probably win that game by more than 14, but you saw how much more motivated Texas was. They were sharp, they were hungry, their mascot almost killed that dog. It was
from the very start when Bevo attacked Uga. Mm-hmm. You knew it was on.
One of the all-time amazing college football gambling moments for me over the weekend. We're sitting around watching the game and about 10 minutes before a kick, we hear about the mascot attack, and we hop on, you know, online to see it. And as soon as we see it, it's like, money line, Texas, we don't need any fucking points. And, yeah, it worked out well. So motivation is very key. Two, coaching changes, I think, are overrated if the assistant coaches are still intact. I think we saw that with Utah State. And another spot where all the assistants were there, the players were there, they didn't give a shit, and the coaching thing was way overrated. And third, a new thing that I kind of learned about bowl season this year is, if you don't know who to pick in a game, look at where they come from in the country. Simply that. Two classic examples of games I got wrong this year, which I shouldn't have. UB, University of Buffalo against Troy. UB's in Buffalo, New York. Troy's in South Alabama. I picked the team from upstate New York to beat the team from South Alabama. That's on me. I also picked the team from Hawaii playing at home against team from Louisiana Tech, Louisiana. So again, look at geographic matchups. I think that really plays a key. I mean, just because guys aren't in the SEC, they played some high school ball in Alabama, and I'm sure those guys from Troy can you know, play a little bit. So motivation, geography, and coaching stuff overrated. But, you know, it's still college football. It was still awesome. There were still a lot of great moments. You know, I'll let you guys talk about some of the stuff you liked. But whatever. Even when college football isn't at its peak, it's still great. So everyone can deal with it. Ryan?
Yeah, Ryan's going to talk about some of the coaching carousel moves that have happened in the last week. Where do you want to start, Ryan?
Well, oh boy.
There's only one place to start.
I guess, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess we got to start down in the dirty South, all the way down to the South Beach, to Coral Gables, to the home of Uncle Luke, to the backyard recording studio of Uncle Luke. We're going to roll one up with him, and we're going to have a conversation about Mark Richt.
I would just like to pause right there and tell you, had you watched Hard Knocks with Jameis Winston, you would know that Miami is not part of the Dirty South, Ryan. So I don't want to get angry tweets and emails. That's Southern. That's warm New York City, as Winston says.
Go to hell. Either way, Mark Richt, you're not welcome wherever that is. And you could take your rat son with you too.
Oh my god.
Seriously.
Put that on Twitter, your rat son, in your preview.
Oh man. I mean, that guy put in zero effort. He just hired his son as a 25-year-old quarterback's coach. No wonder their quarterback situation was dismal at best. I mean, it's just embarrassing. No recruiting, no preparation, no effort. Just, you suck. You just get out. I'm so glad that they made the right move and brought back their boy, Manny Diaz. And then he first came in and just cleaned house. Just absolutely pink slipped the entire freaking staff on offense.
Which you worked with last year. Being an assistant coach, by the way, it's like, hey, we're all assistants, right? It's like, nah.
Yeah, and then imagine all your coworkers who are at your level. One guy gets promoted, and then he's like, by the way, I always thought you all sucked. You're Get all the fired. Fuck out. You're all gone.
So good. It really is the best.
Listen, Tom, speaking of Hard Knocks, when you sit in this seat, you have to make the hard decisions. You'll know that when you get to sit in this seat. I don't know if you caught that Hugh Jackson this year on Hard Knocks. It was pretty good. It was the only episode I saw.
Hugh's, oh God.
Hugh, yeah, well, you know, that was
that's a whole nother pathetic.
So great job, Mark Richt, getting the hell out of there. Great job, Miami, bringing back Manny Diaz, who understands the legacy of the program and where it needs to get to. And congratulations, Manny Diaz, on hiring an offensive coordinator. Dan, would you like to fill in the listeners?
Major Applewhite, not unemployed long.
Major Applewhite. One of my first, most fondest gambling moments revolve around Major Applewhite, and I will always always root for him. So, yeah, good job, Miami. Excellent work.
Ryan, worse nepotism hire, Rick hiring his son or Clay Helton hiring his brother?
I'd say it's got to be Rick, because 25 years old with no resume, like, that's really bad. At least with your brother, like, your brothers, if there's a problem, you just beat the shit out of each other and you move on. That's what brothers do.
Yeah.
So, you know, although I would like to also nominate John Gruden for the nepotism award by firing his entire strength and conditioning staff and just making it his son.
That's pretty good.
Who's like a professional weightlifter.
This guy lifts weights.
No, he's like a legitimate, like, professional powerlifter. Like, travels the world and does, like, powerlifting competitions. I don't know how that translates to an NFL strength and conditioning program necessarily.
It doesn't work.
Well, clearly it doesn't, because the Raiders suck. But they look damn good when that cocoa butter.
Would like to say it's particularly bad for this reason. The head coach is rarely in the weight room. The team, when they're in the weight room, that's their chance to blow off steam. They're powerlifting heavy weights. They're yelling. They're fucking listening to crazy music. And that's when they get to talk shit about the coaches. Man, coach does this. Coach, and you just vent. You get shit off your chest. You can't do that when the coach's son is the freaking strength coach.
Oh, so we got a snitch in the weight room.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't have a snitch in the weight room. That's a sacred place in a sports team, man. Like, our coach barely ever watched us in the weight room. It was always the assistant coaches and the trainers. So, like, that was our chance to vent, to talk shit. Like, it sucks, man. So, anyways, back to the real sport. Take the points.
Yeah, we've got a lot of other stuff to get to, but Dan, you got something?
Do you think that maybe Mark Richt and Major Applewhite had other plans on their mind besides playing bowl games, seeing that one loss by 35 and one loss by 46? I mean, that just shows you about motivation. Like, and also Holgorsen, he went to Houston. His team lost too. I mean, he had other reasons. But, like, if you look at motivation, like, all the coaches who moved on or got fired or left, their teams all got waxed in bowl games by 3 touchdowns plus, so...
Are you suggesting some kind of collusion, or are you saying that the reason they didn't care was also the reason that they were fired?
Richt had zero interest in playing that football game. He knew he was finished for probably the last 2 months, and he's like, we got to go to New York City. Great. It's a vacation. We'll lose 38-3, whatever. And then Applewhite knew he was already probably on the way out because of all the off the field. I mean,
Dana didn't even go back with the team on the plane. He just stayed.
That's crazy.
He stayed in Florida, and the team went back with the assistant coaches.
Wow.
So that kind of tells you, like, as soon as the game was over, he's like, all right, guys, good season. Head on back. I'm going to chill here.
He's like, yeah, I got a hotel for a little bit. And then he's like, yeah, I'm not going back to West Virginia. Sorry. The movers are already there.
Self-imposed Lane Kiffin situation.
So good. All right, move on. We're good.
All right, let's move on. So anything else you want to say about Dana going to Houston? It does seem odd to me that you would leave West Virginia for Houston.
Nope. Off the field stuff. West Virginia, outside of work, you can go in the woods and shoot raccoons. Outside of work in Houston, you can do anything because it's the fifth biggest city in the country. No brainer. Back to Houston. Plus, if he does well there, he can get a great job. Plus, also, there's a backdoor chance in Houston's wildest dreams they'll get added to the Big 12, which will never happen. But that's a whole other thing.
All right. And we'll continue on the coaching carousel. Which one of you two would like to talk about Rich Rodriguez, former Arizona coach out in your territory and a beloved coach of Take the Points?
I will. I mean... Ole Miss's offense scored like 1,000 points last year, right? Am I wrong? Like,
they were fairly good most of the year.
What the hell is he going to do any different? It's going to be the same crazy spread. I mean, but honestly, I'm okay with Rich Rod going there as a coordinator. I think he'll be fine on offense. I think he'll be okay. If he has to call defense, we know we have issues. But I think he'll be okay at Ole Miss. Decent hire, surprisingly.
I agree. He's always been a good offensive guru. It's just the head coaching that doesn't seem to fit. Dan, if Greg Williams can still get NFL interviews, then there's nothing that really seems that bad in comparison.
Valid point. Yeah, speaking of interviews, I mean, I don't want to talk about the NFL, but the Packers are bringing in, like, Jim Caldwell for an interview. It's like, come on, what are we doing here? What are we doing? What are we doing? All right, move on. I want
you,
to talk about
you that. Love this. This is a favorite topic of our show is the retread coaches.
It's the NFL takes it to another level.
Greg Williams is the greatest of all time. This guy couldn't win at San Jose State, and somehow he's going to be like the Browns coach.
Yep, he's going to sign in the offseason. No NFL. Let's go.
All right, so last coach we'll talk about then is another current Arizona guy, which is Kevin Sumlin, and you have a little interesting take on him.
What a horrible coach. And I don't, and like, I don't mean to be a hater, but I mean, the evidence is clear.
There's more to our take than just that he's horrible.
Maybe outside of Johnny Manziel, I mean, it's been a total train wreck. I mean, he had Kyler Murray at Texas A&M that nobody remembers in a spread formation with, like, who was on the other side? Like Von Miller or what the hell is his name on the Browns?
Miles Garrett.
Miles
Garrett was there.
He also had Kyle Allen at the same time at QB. Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray.
Who just won a game in the NFL.
That's right.
Kyle Allen won a game in the NFL. Kyler Murray's winning a Heisman. They had like the number whatever, like top five pick in the draft on defense in there. They got Christian Kirk playing wide receiver. He goes round two. He's horrible. And then he goes to Arizona and he makes Khalil Tate worse. So...
Oh, you mean Heisman favorite Khalil Tate?
Yeah, thank God we didn't blow any money on that one. But Jesus, I feel bad for Tate. I wish he would transfer, but I don't know, man. People forget that Kyler Murray was at A&M and had to transfer out of there. And that's on someone, clearly.
It's no good.
I'm so mad.
We were laughing about Cliff Kingsbury getting all these head coaching interviews. Meanwhile, his head coach, Clay Helton, his next job will be, what did we say, San Jose State?
Yep.
So that's a funny situation, but I don't think we need to waste more time on that. The last thing I just wanted to talk about was the Citrus Bowl. As a lifelong Penn State fan, I felt really good for Kentucky. It's rare that you get to see a team like that have their best season, biggest game ever. You get to really see them in the most important game of their program history and then win it and see those guys so happy. As a Penn State fan, I'm happy for them. They can have that one. They deserved it. They played great all season. They played great in that game. It was awesome to see all of their stars play in the game. Even other Josh Allen, who definitely should be drafted by the Buffalo Bills, who could be... I know in the game they were talking about him being the number one pick, which might be ambitious, but, you know, yeah. A top 10 pick who decides to come back to play in the Citrus Bowl. Not since Peyton Manning, as my good friend Steve Spurrier would say, not since Peyton Manning has such a star played in the Citrus Bowl. Mm. But yeah, it was just great for them. And then Penn State, on the other hand, they did exactly what we said. You know, they had little motivation in a season that every Penn State fan and player wanted to end. Except for Trace McSorley, who's one of the greatest in program history, who almost single-handedly willed them to a win with no help from his coaches and certainly no help from his receivers. I don't know if they fired the wide receiver. I think they fired the wide receiver coach just like yesterday, which is excellent because their wide receivers have been horrible this year.
Which is excellent.
But in the same week that James Franklin, this is the most James Franklin week ever is what I was saying before. In the same week that he decides to kick that field goal and makes a coaching blunder that people think cost them the game, he also has had such good recruiting that Miles Sanders, star running back, who's projected like the 9th best running back in the draft, not even great, he declares for the NFL draft, and a bunch of other Penn State players have declared for the NFL draft. Not because they're stud players, but because the recruiting classes coming in are so good that they know that they're not going to play much. Penn State has two young freshmen running back, you know, going to be sophomores, and they have a recruit, you know, freshman coming in who's one of the best players in the country from Virginia. And Miles Sanders, I think, looked around and was like, shit, man, like, I'm Mr. Pennsylvania, and I'm going to, like, maybe split time between four guys next year. So anyway, he's off to the Browns probably. but yeah, it's just so James Franklin that at the same time he's doing that, just such an unbelievable job recruiting, he's just having these like simple on the field blunders. Anyone, as we've said, anyone who played NCAA football 94 growing up would have known to go for the touchdown there. So
horrible.
Time for every team to sign a video game coordinator.
Us.
Anything else you guys would like to talk about, or shall we get into the playoff in the game?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it.
Bring it.
First round of the playoffs were two blowouts. I have to admit that I was wrong about both games, even though I technically won the Oklahoma game with a backdoor cover. My analysis was off. And so I want to apologize for that. You know, we come on here and we talk about all the things we got right, but I blew that. I'd also like to say that the right teams made the playoff. It's really easy for everyone to see Notre Dame get blown out and then be like, well, Ohio State should have been in or whatever. But like, you can't really look at it that way. I mean, the teams that made it were the best teams to make it. And Alabama and Clemson are just so much better than everyone this year. And that's all there is to it. So with that in mind, we have Alabama-Clemson 3 or 4, depending on how you want to score it. Here is the game. Here are the details. Number 1 Alabama versus number 2 Clemson, Monday, January 7th, Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 5 local time. The line opened at 6.5. It's now down to Alabama minus 5.5. Or minus 6 in a few places. Over under 59.5. That one hasn't really moved at all. Dexter Lawrence is officially out for this game, along with the two other Clemson players who were suspended for Osterine. Ryan, have you ever heard of this Osterine before?
No.
Okay, neither have I. But anyway, these guys are out. They will travel with the team, which according to Dabo is good because they can be there with their other players and help motivate them and fire them up, even though they can't suit up for the game. Albert Huggins will replace Lawrence, which is important. He played in the last game, played pretty well against Notre Dame. He caused a fumble. Obviously, he's no Dexter Lawrence, but, you know, he was all right. There's some other things we could talk about, but I think it's time to just go into our breakdown. So I'm happy to take it unless one of you guys wants to kick it off.
You got it, Tom.
All right. I got a lot of stuff, so I'll pause periodically to let you guys weigh in. First off, we have four Bama-Clemson games. In the previous three, Bama is 1-2 against the spread, which is surprising because Alabama's, you know, known for beating teams and covering. The only cover was last year in the first round, which I don't count when previewing this game, and we'll get to that. In the two national championship games, Bama failed to cover both times, and obviously one of them they lost outright. So I'll start with just breaking down some of the units. The Clemson D line versus the Alabama O line, I think, is going to be the most important matchup in this game. Clemson D is the best they've ever had, certainly in these four meetings, and I think ever in school history. They led college football in sacks. They're just awesome all around. They allowed 13.7 points a game, which is just unheard of in this day and age. Obviously, they're missing Dexter Lawrence, which Kirk Herbstreit was on TV saying that he didn't think that was as big of a deal as people are making it out to be. I completely disagree. I think this is really a killer because Alabama's O-line is one of the weaker units, I guess, they've had during their whole Alabama 10-year dynasty run. They're also missing Deonte Brown. They're obviously good. It's Alabama, and especially in the run game. But I did think there was opportunity for Clemson to get a lot of pressure on Tua in obvious passing situations, which I think is going to be hampered greatly by Lawrence being out. And I think they still have some opportunity to get to Tua and cause him some problems, sort of the way Georgia did. but I do think that's diminished. And what would have been a huge advantage for Clemson, I think, is now downgraded to a slight advantage or a moderate advantage. So that's big. Anything you guys want to add there, or shall I keep moving on?
Keep going all the way through. You're good.
All right, I'll go all the way through, and then I'll give you guys the floor. So the Clemson offense, Trevor Lawrence, a really elite player, obviously, five-star recruit. I am not considering him a freshman when reviewing because he's not played like a freshman. We've talked about the way the game has changed and freshmen come in ready to play, but him especially, like, he has not seemed like a freshman really at all this season. 47 points a game since he took over as the starter, I think, 8 or 9 weeks ago. Just unbelievable. Alabama, as we saw against Georgia with Fromm, and we saw in the second half of the Oklahoma game, if they are susceptible to something, it is the kind of passing game with an elite quarterback kind of really knowing where to put the ball. And it takes an elite quarterback, but Clemson does have that. And so I think there's opportunity there. Clemson doesn't have the receivers they've had in the previous years. Ross has been coming on as of late. And then Hunter Renfrow is always that reliable guy that seems to pop up in key situations. So I think they've got a good core, but it's not what they've had in the other two championship games. On the other side, I think Etienne is the best running back Clemson has had during the stretch. So if I'm Alabama, I've got the great defensive line. I am really selling out early and often against Etienne and the run, and I'm trying to just shut down the run completely and make Trevor Lawrence throw as much as possible. And if Alabama can get an early lead using that strategy, then it opens them up to rush Lawrence and pressure him a little more. The early lead, I think, is the absolute number one key to this game. The reason being, we obviously saw what happened with Bama against Oklahoma, where they got out to a 28-0 lead, and how Oklahoma played pretty well in the second half, but you just could not crawl back from that deficit. Versus what happened against Georgia, where Georgia was the team that jumped out on them and then really took some good fortune to win a game that a lot of people think that maybe they should have lost. In the three Bama-Clemson playoff meetings, first half, Alabama has outscored Clemson 38-24. In the second half, Alabama has outscored Clemson 62-57. So Alabama winning both. However, remove last year's game, which was a first-round game, which was the most unevenly matched of the three, and it kind of flips a little. Bama only wins the first half 28-21, and Clemson actually wins the second half 54-48. So given what happened with Oklahoma and that history with Clemson, if Bama doesn't jump out to an early lead, if they don't play really well early, I think that's a huge advantage for Clemson, and I think that could be trouble. If Bama does get out early, then I think that's a huge advantage for Bama. So I think there's a good chance this game could, in a way, could be decided in the first quarter, quarter and a half, depending on what happens. The reason I'm not counting last year's game is because, one, it's not the national championship and it's a different atmosphere. And two is Kelly Bryant. I mean, in the three matchups, they've had elite Deshaun Watson twice and now an elite Trevor Lawrence. And then Kelly Bryant, who, while he was good, you know, they just didn't have that dimension and it showed during the game. So one more stat is, I know I'm throwing a lot at people, but I'll get through all this and then we can talk about more of a just emotional level. The S&P star rating. I don't know how the fuck they calculate this, but it seems to be pretty accurate and people go by it. Bama is the number one team. Clemson's the number two overall. However, Clemson has improved 0.2 since last season when they met, and Alabama has declined 0.2. So this is a very, very evenly matched game. And then the last sort of matchup I'll be looking at is the Alabama receivers versus the Clemson secondary. Clemson, if they have a weakness on D, it is the secondary. Meanwhile, Jerry Jeudy has really emerged as, you know, the next great Alabama star. And I actually think that this Alabama receiving core might be the deepest they've had. I know if you just look at the top two stars, it's not the best ever, but they've got like four guys who are really good. And then obviously Alabama has the X factor, which is the best player in all of college football. One of the best players that we've ever seen in our lifetime. The real Heisman winner, Tua Tagovailoa. And so it's always hard for me to go against the best player in any game, especially when they're like a generational type player or one of the best in our lifetime. Do you want my pick now, or do you guys want to weigh in?
Go ahead, take your pick.
All right. So my favorite bet is the under of 59.5. I think people are severely underestimating the two defenses, and they're looking at the Deshaun Watson games, which were a little different. No Lane Kiffin this time around, so, you know, that offense is going to be stalled. Loxley, you know, who knows what kind of space he's in. But even if Alabama's operating at their peak, I think Clemson defense is better than anyone they've faced, including Georgia. And I think Alabama's defense is obviously awesome. So I think you're looking at a game in the 20s. As a Bills fan, it pains me to say this, but I've gone back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the one real weird area in this game is special teams, where these teams aren't as great as you would think for elite programs. I am sadly going to predict that this game comes down to a last-second field goal. Alabama leads 26-24. Clemson lines up with 1 second left for a field goal, and I'm sorry to say it, I think they're going to miss. And so I think Alabama wins the game 26-24 on a, you know, basically a special teams play. And I will say that this is the best final matchup I can remember seeing. Just two awesome teams. Both of these teams would be in the top 20 teams of our whole life, regardless of outcome. And, man, it's just, it sucks that somebody has to lose. So whoever does lose should still feel very good about their program.
That was a great recap, Tom.
It's the championship game. I bring it.
I know. You got some ratings in there.
I got it.
Staff.
All right, so I'm going to shut up for the next, like, 10 minutes or so, and you guys just take it away.
All right, Ryan, you got the...
Okay. Well, there's kind of two big things at play to me in this game. And, Tom, you mentioned one of them, which was the team that gets out to the early lead is probably, you know, got a huge advantage in this game because of the defenses. But I kind of disagree with the other part you said about, you know, Alabama, that being a problem for them. I don't agree. I think Alabama takes way more deep shots than Clemson does by a mile. Like, they take way more deep shots. Their wide receivers are way more elite than Clemson's. So I just think that they're going to test them early and often, and they're going to take shots deep. I mean, Tua throws a great deep ball. Lawrence is still a freshman. Like you said, he's solid, doesn't make mistakes, you know, does well. But he doesn't take a ton of deep shots, doesn't really have that, you know, that Sammy Watkins, Martavis Bryant, DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Williams type of guy who can just flat out burn by someone for 70 yards. You know, so I think that plays to Alabama's advantage. Now, the problem with that is the other thing is, since week four, 2014, Clemson has been an underdog 8 times. They are 7-1 against the spread with 5 outright wins. So the few times that Dabo, once or twice a year when he's an underdog, he covers almost every single time and straight up wins more than half. So that's a problem. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm looking on this game is between those two factors. What do I think is going to be more in play? And to me, it just, you know, like you said, Tom, like I've said for several of these bowl games, we're trying to figure out who to pick is which team has the best player on the field. And when that team also has the best player who touches the ball every single play, then that's just a huge advantage. I think the only thing that they have to be aware, like, super aware of is don't get too cute with the Jalen Hurts shit. Like, that, they went overboard with that. That was too much. It was like when the Wildcat got popular in the NFL and, like, teams just went way too overboard with it. Mm-hmm. And it got way too easy to stop. You know, I think Clemson's defense and Brett Venables is just way too smart, way too talented to fall for that shit. So as long as Alabama doesn't go overboard with and getting cute with things and they just go out and say, we have a star quarterback, we have flat-out Olympic speed wide receivers, and we have a stable of running backs who are the best in the country, you know, if they stick to what they do best, they're going to win this game. And I think they win this game by 10 to 13 points. But if they get cute, then this shit's going to come down to a field goal, and Alabama kickers have not been the most reliable over the years. So, you know, it can go either way. But for me, I'm going to take Alabama. I'm going to take the under. And I'm going to give you a score of 27-23 Alabama.
Clemson cover.
Yeah, sorry, not to counteract you, but yeah, that would be a Clemson cover then, right?
Yeah, Alabama wins the national title, but okay. Clemson will cover.
All right, so you and I are on roughly the same page, although I think it'll be pretty evenly matched and come down to the end. I am picking Clemson to cover and the under as well. So, Dan, it's all you.
Oh, okay, guys. Well, excellent opinions and breakdowns. Alabama, Clemson, 3. I have a lot of thoughts, as usual.
This is your time to shine. Vegas outsider Dan Partridge, this is what we wait all year for.
Last time I got an Alabama game wrong, week 3, 2015, against Ole Miss. I've called the two losses since then, and all the Alabama outright wins since. Anyway.
You called Georgia.
And Auburn the year before, and Clemson in the national title game the year before that, too. 3 in a row. Anyway, this game is amazing, and you're right, Tom. I cannot wait. Who cares about the rest of the bowl season? It's all about this game right here. Okay, so last year, Jalen Hurts played. Offense wasn't good enough. Tua comes on board. They come back. They win the national title. This year, everyone expects Alabama to steamroll to a national title. Everything looked peachy. Tua got hurt. They were able to get by Georgia. Tua heals up. They smash Oklahoma. That's your Alabama season in a nutshell. Let's go over to Clemson. Clemson's coming off a playoff loss to Alabama last year, getting embarrassed. They started Kelly Bryant. They don't put up a lot of points early. They're playing both Bryant and Lawrence. They move to Lawrence. As Lawrence becomes accustomed with the team rounds into full Clemson form, start blowing some teams out, including Notre Dame. That's where you're at with Clemson. So what the fuck's going to happen in this game? Well, first of all, matchups. Yes, Alabama has the wide receivers, in theory, to take advantage of the weakness that is the Clemson secondary. But, like Tom said, I think this Bama offensive line isn't one of their best, and this is maybe the best defensive line. So I don't think Tua is going to be comfortable enough to hit these wide receivers deep. Two, on the other side of the ball, how will Trevor Lawrence and his offense do against Alabama's defense? Also, not as good. I like Ryan's point about the wide receivers. They got a lot of talent, but they're raw. And, you know, they made some plays against Notre Dame. You saw that. Who knows what happens? This is Alabama. This is the national title game.
Patrick Surtain Jr.
So who's going to win this game and why? Well, I'm going to give you my pick at the end, but there's two main factors for me choosing the winner of this game. First of all, I will say the point spread's totally ridiculous. It should be closer to a field goal. I in fact, would make it 3.5 or 4, probably 3.5.
Three and a half is perfect.
I think 3.5 is the right number. I've heard people say it should be closer to 1, which is so crazy. I've heard people say it should be 11. So this, there's a lot of opinion on this game. Two main factors: motivation and who's the best player in this game. Motivation. It's a national title game. How could anyone have more motivation? Well, there is an answer in this one. Alabama won the national title last year. Alabama just beat Oklahoma and shut up Kyler Murray. That was a big game. Everyone was looking forward to that game more than the Clemson-Notre Dame game. That game was on second for a reason. Clemson's motivation, they just lost to Alabama last year. They had to switch quarterbacks. They wanted another crack at Alabama with Lawrence so bad. So I'm going to give the slight motivation edge to Clemson. And who's the best player in this game? Good point. I think when we look back at this game in 10 years, the best player in this game will be Trevor Lawrence, without a doubt. From what I've read recently and seen, Trevor Lawrence is, I think, the quietest, underappreciated person in college football. If you listen to scouts, there are multiple scouts who say he's the best high school prospect ever that's ever played the sport. 6'5", 200 pounds, makes all the throws, composure. He committed to Clemson like as a sophomore in high school. He took no other visits to any other colleges, nothing. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to make it to the NFL and be a superstar and be the whole nine yards. I think him and Tua, I mean, it's going to be amazing next year to watch. I think Clemson wins this game outright. I think Clemson's going to win a low-scoring game, 23-20. I think Alabama kicks too many field goals, struggles in the red zone, and Clemson scores just enough touchdowns and somehow to get this game won. This kind of wraps up the season for Alabama. They're very angry. Tua doesn't win the Heisman. He got injured. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Georgia. But they're going to fall short this time to Clemson. Clemson's going to win it this year. Then next year, everyone's going to think Trevor Lawrence is going to win the Heisman. Some weird shit's going to happen to him, and we're going to run this thing back again another year. So I think Clemson's going to win this game, very low scoring. Sorry, Alabama gods. I know I only poke you a couple times, but if I were you, and I know I'm me, I'll be doing a Clemson money line plus under parlay for sure. But I'll be betting both Clemson with the points and the under and the Clemson money line, wrapping all that shit up together in one package. So, yeah, I think Clemson's been underappreciated all year. No one's really talked about them that much. They've just been quietly smashing people. They're hungry. Venables is totally insane. He's a madman. Watching him on the sidelines last week against Notre Dame, he's going to be, like, on the field, like, the whole, like, he's going to be the most fired up person on the stadium. But here we go. So, yeah, I'm going to roll with Clemson. I think they get it done Monday night. Let's go Tigers.
It was so, so hard for me to pick a side because it seems like all three of us basically have the same analysis, and it's just a matter of how's the ball going to break, you know?
That's
like we all recognize the same matchups and the same weaknesses, if you can even call it that. I mean, a weakness for Clemson is like a strength on any other team. You know, their secondary would all start on, you know, 95% of any other teams, and we're calling it a weakness. So it was so hard. I was very, very tempted to pick Clemson outright as well. I think what changed my mind was, you know, what Ryan said, the fact that they have, I think, the best player in the game. I agree with you about looking back 10 years from now that Trevor Lawrence might have a better, you know, long-term career. But I think, you know, at this very, very moment, this year right now, I think Tua's got the edge. The one other thing I didn't mention because it's more of just an emotional thing and there's no real justification is last year we did our greatest teams of our lifetime. We talked about the, you know, what it was, 16 best teams of our lifetime put into a bracket and who would be the best. And our top four were like USC with Leinart, Tommy Frazier, Nebraska, Tim Tebow, Florida, that 01 Miami team, others. I tried to think about each of these teams, and let's say they win this game by a field goal. Both of these teams would fall in the bracket. I tried to think where I would put them based on their whole season. I think if this Alabama team beats Clemson by a field goal, they're going into our greatest teams of our lifetime bracket if we were to do it again. as probably a top six seed and maybe even like a top four seed. Meanwhile, if Clemson were to win this game by a field goal, they go into our top teams of our lifetime bracket. I'm thinking more like 10.
Something like that.
So just for that reason, you know, it's that kind of impression that you can't really justify with stats. It's more of an emotional thing. But I just feel like this Bama team is just at an elite level that we haven't seen in a long time. Or we've seen it throughout our life, but
we'll
not
find
much.
Out.
It takes a Ray we'll Lewis team. So Donald we'll see.
Is awake right now looking at game plans. He's pissed.
You know what I would say, though, even though I'm predicting Alabama to win, I think this is going to be the game that that turns the tide. Sorry for the pun, but I think this is going to be the one that sort of shifts the dynasties from Alabama to Clemson for the next several years. I think kids who are 14, 15, 16, who are thinking about colleges and who are elite, you know, IMG type guys, they're going to look at this game. They're going to see Alabama, who's, you know, settled into this formulaic thing. Yeah, they're great, but they've got, you know, Saban, this older coach who's, you know, not as fired up as he once was. And then they're going to see Dabo and Venables going crazy. They're going to see the bright orange. They're going to see those Clemson fans who are so thrilled to be there, as opposed to the Alabama fans who take it for granted. I think this is where Clemson starts to be like the number one cool team for top recruits to go to, if they're not already. And I think you'll see 2 or 3 years from now is when it really pays off. And we're talking about, you know, this was the moment where there was no longer a gap between Alabama and Clemson. They have hit and potentially even will cross a little bit. I'm not saying Alabama's going to like suck in 3 years, but I think, you know, this might be, even if they lose, where Clemson sort of takes the reins as the number one dynasty for the next 5 years.
We'll find out, Tom. Monday night.
We'll see. It'll be a tin cup situation.
Brought to you by Camel Cigarettes, right? We're sponsoring it this year.
Camel Cigarettes, I believe, yeah. Well, it's been hard for them to get, you know, money. Ticket sales are down. I don't know if you've read.
The Camel Cigarettes national title game. They're putting Joe Camel right at the 50-yard line this year, I heard.
I got to say, I know that on StubHub you can find some cheap tickets for this game, but I was reading two different articles today that were talking about, oh, there's Alabama-Clemson fatigue. People are sick of this matchup. Are you fucking kidding me? This is greatest. This is awesome. This is the best thing to happen in college football. Of course, one of them was from like a Washington Huskies blog.
Well,
so
he's
that's
a loser.
Not reliable.
Have fun with Jake fucking Eason next year, you jagoff.
Speaking of great gambling moments, that fucking Rose Bowl, Ohio State up, what were they up, 28-7 or something like that? I've got Ohio State as my like number one confidence pick in the bowl thing.
28-3.
Yeah, 28-3. And I've bet,
like the Falcons.
Obviously, I've bet them minus the six. They somehow let Washington crawl all the way back in there to make it a 5-point game. And I'm like, well, shit. Like, they're not going to try to score again. So obviously, I'm going to lose this. Washington goes for two. Browning throws a pick in the end zone. The guy starts running it back out of the end zone. I'm like, oh, my God, if he returns this all the way, that's 2 points. And that's a cover. And he's running and he's running. And then he just, like, trips over Browning's feet at like the 45-yard line.
Yeah, it was bad.
Oh, so close.
Good gambling moment, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it was a legendary one. It was bad in my case, but a heck of a moment. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back for a few minutes, and we're going to talk about our Take the Points Hall of Fame 2019 class nominees. We'll be right back.
I was going to take some ayahuasca during this break.
Yeah. Ayahuasca now?
We would be, I don't know, I've never done ayahuasca, but I imagine whatever visions we had, or I had, would be really fucking stupid. Like, it would just be, I would imagine 95 or 94 Nebraska playing 94 Penn State, and I'd be like, I saw it. I know everyone thinks Nebraska would win, but Kerry Collins had this pass to Kyle Brady. You have no idea.
That would make you insane. You'd come out of the ayahuasca coma knowing that Penn State was the better team, but no one would believe you. You'd be in an insane asylum in weeks.
Oh, yeah. I'd be like the Memento guy.
You're like, I'm telling you, you, Tom, nobody cares.
I know it's true. They'd be like, no, you created this in your mind. I'd be like, no, I've seen it.
You'd have to move to Pennsylvania and then become like, you know, mayor of Philadelphia. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be mayor of Philadelphia, but I'm pretty sure I could move to Pennsylvania and be the mayor of some Bucks County town in the next year. Like, it doesn't take much.
Just a little ayahuasca in Mahoney's basement. That's it.
I seen it. All right. I'm ready to keep going if you guys are.
Yeah. Let's...
Do you want to talk about Iowa-asca? How do we pronounce this?
This ayahuasca isn't going to drink itself. No, I'm kidding. No, that's not true, listeners. No, let's talk about the College Football Hall of Fame, then wrap it back in with some ayahuasca.
I'll just reintroduce what we're doing here, because there are a few things that the listeners need to know. This is the Take the Points College Football Hall of Fame. So this is not necessarily the greatest players, coaches, announcers of all time. It is the ones that have mattered the most to us in our lifetime and our podcast. Now, you'll see there is a lot of crossover with, you know, the greatest of all time for everyone nationally and for us specifically, but there are a few that you're going to say, well, this guy's not the greatest of all time. Why is Tim Biakabatuka in here? It's because of their meaning in our life. And I'm going to go through each category, and these are the nominees. Now, when we actually induct people next week, I think we'll probably only take, you know, two or three from each category. But these are the ones we'll be thinking about and reviewing over the next week and deciding who to put in. So I'll read the list of each category, and then you guys weigh in with just your initial thoughts and how you might be leaning or any fond memories that will factor in. So we'll start with the players. No particular order, just how I thought of them.
Florida quarterbacks first.
These are the players that are up for potential induction into the Take the Points 2019 Hall of Fame inaugural class. Tim Tebow, Danny Werfel, Tommy Frazier, Kajana Carter, Rashawn Salaam, Vince Young, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Michael Vick, Peter Warwick, Charlie Ward, Scott Drysback of Michigan. This is one that needs clarification. He is there for the great honor of beating out both Tom Brady and Brian Greasy for the starting job at Michigan in 1996, which is an all-time legendary feat. Kellen Moore of Boise State, a personal favorite. Pat Mahomes for his time at Texas Tech. The aforementioned Tim Biakabatuka, the most underrated college football running back of all time. Major Applewhite, the aforementioned Major Applewhite, as a player at Texas, is a potential nominee. And Robert Griffin III. So these are all guys that have had a significant impact in our life, and many of them for many others as well. What are your guys' thoughts? Anybody who stands out from that? Or what will you take into account when we do the inductions next week?
We do a Take the Points gambling podcast. So for me, I'm going to try to think of how any of these guys influence gambling. So I'm looking at you, RG3, because that was a hell of a fucking run at Baylor. My God.
Yeah, nobody, I mean, RG3 is in there for the excitement and the gambling. Same reason Pat Mahomes is in there.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote for the three lefties. So, yeah, four lefties. I'm sorry. Four lefties in there. Tebow, Leinart, Vic, and Kellen Moore. Four left-handers. That's where my allegiance is.
We're very inclusive here at Take the Points. It's important we include all different types of handed people. I will be doing my picks mostly on personal preference or life relevance, I guess. So I'll give extra credit to guys who were meaningful when I was growing up.
I will say that the Take the Points Hall of Fame is unlike any other Hall of Fame in which the players are not the focus. All the other categories are better than players, so go right ahead, Tom.
Oh, it gets better as we go on.
Yeah, it does.
And it's not for their play. Like, I'm going to just say Charlie Ward was great, but the reason he's in there is because he was so good on NCAA Football 93. And to me, he's not an inaugural class nominee, although he might get in one day. All right, coaches. This one's easy for me. We start with the ball coach, my personal favorite of all time and a Take the Points legend, Steve Spurrier, followed by Bobby Bowden, Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, Urban Meyer, Mack Brown, UAB's Bill Clark, who gets in for, well, Ryan can talk about him. And then another Take the Points favorite, Kevin Kelly, the Texas high school coach who never punts.
Awesome. Excited about that list, Tom. That's a great list. Thank you for putting Coach of the Year, Eddie Robinson, Head Coach of the Year, Bill Clark.
You know what? I should have listed Eddie Robinson himself as well.
Maybe, but you should have put Lane on there. So we'll talk about that later or next week. Continue on with the Hall of Fame.
Hey, listen, just because they're not in the nominees doesn't mean they can't get in. It could be a surprise.
Riles and Leach all need to be on that list.
Art Riles gets in with a 2-3 majority. That's all I'm saying.
Art Riles is not getting my vote. Not for the inaugural class. For me, so I'll certainly tip my hand on this one. There's only one coach for me that's going in the inaugural class. The rest of them can wait till next year.
I think I know who it is, Tom.
Yeah, I think we all know who it is.
Go on to announcers. Did you know my pick for this one?
And I think I'm predicting a special guest appearance by said coach on next week's podcast. All right, announcers. This was the hardest one because all of these guys and women mean a great deal to me personally and to all of us. So we start with the greatest of all time, Mr. Beano Cook. We also go with other legends, Vern Lundquist, Keith Jackson, Brent Musburger, Herb Street, Fowler. Don't forget about Craig Pony James, the original College Game Day host. Lee Corso, Gus Johnson, and Doris Burke, favorite of Take the Points.
That's right. There's some classic names on that list. I mean, my goodness, can't wait to talk about this. Beano Cook. Hey, Tom, there's a Beano Cook novel or whatever coming out on the 8th, I think. A book of his stories.
Oh, I'm well aware.
Oh, good.
That's going to be, we talk about it a lot, but about doing the Take the Points book club, but this is actually going to be the Take the Points book club. If you guys don't read it, I will, and I'll do a whole hour thing by myself.
Seriously, it's going to be, you're going to learn so much about like the 1966 TCU squad. Like, it's going to be so good. It's endless.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. He'll be like, I was blasting Run Around Sue on a loop on my record player, and I was breaking down the Michigan State TCU Rose Bowl.
It's so, I don't know.
All right. Beano Cook's my favorite of all time, so he's going to get my vote. I'm going to try to limit it to 3 per category with my votes, so this is going to be the hardest one by far. I don't know where my other votes are going, so we'll think about it. All right, next category, mascots and animals. Another very, very tricky one. And I will say, I did this list before the Sugar Bowl.
Yes.
I did it before the Sugar Bowl, and I have included both Ugga, the Georgia Bulldog, and Bevo, the UT Steer. Along with those two, we have Puddles the Duck, the Oregon mascot, Boise State's Kickoff Tee Retrieving Dog, the Florida State Seminole, that's the guy who rides in on the horse with a spear. Yeah, we all know. Yeah. The Penn State Nittany Lion, that includes both the Nittany Lion in the costume as well as the statue on campus that everybody goes to. Howard's Rock, technically not an animal, but I put it in this category as a mascot, the rock at Clemson's Death Valley, as well as the Notre Dame Play Like a Champion Today sign. This one is, we don't like Notre Dame on the show particularly, but I do like this one because I for a long time had a habit after Rudy came out of just walking through any door and just slapping the top of it, much like the Notre Dame players.
Fair point. This is an excellent list, Tom. I will spoil this a bit. There will be a write-in for Jonathan, the UConn Husky Dog mascot. Will definitely be getting a write-in vote for sure. Just let you know.
Well, that's good to know, Dan, because my daughter has a stuffed animal of Jonathan the Husky who can make a guest appearance on next week's show. So we'll have the first ever stuffed animal appearance.
Head coach Jonathan the Husky Dog stops by.
Couldn't be worse.
Tom, I just want to point out that Herm Edwards appreciates that you don't put no devils on that list.
No devils on that list.
Man, no, Drake. Not first ballot for sure.
But Mandrake should be on that list.
Mandrake made a
new Arizona State logo.
No, like the Oscars, there's sort of a cutoff, and Mandrake was too late. So Mandrake will be on next year.
Nope, right in. First ballot, Mandrake.
Like I said, it's by 2-1 majority, and I can't stop you guys. So this is going to be another tough one for me. Bevo the Steer made a strong push at the Sugar Bowl.
Made a great case.
He was like a middling candidate for me when I made this list, but he's made a strong push.
I watched that replay like 25 times.
Oh yeah.
On Tuesday night. It was the best thing I've seen in a while.
I've seen so many angles.
I saw a replay where someone put the Stone Cold music on, where the glass broke when Bevo came through the thing, and the fucking announcer JR going, "Oh my god, oh my god,
that's Bevo's music."
Exactly. Oh my god, here comes Bevo. Broken glass. Very funny.
All right.
You should play that anyway.
Yeah. Well.
This is pure genius, Tom, and I commend you. These are all Tom's recommendations. Please announce the last category.
All right, the last one, this is where it really gets good, and this one's going to be the most heated discussion. This is where this last podcast is going to be like 4 hours. I'm calling this the memorabilia wing. And I will apologize that, you know, there is sort of a, like, there are a lot from a couple of seasons, and whereas like other parts of our life are not as well represented, but here it is. Number one, a videotape of the 2007 Fiesta Bowl, the greatest college football game ever played. This, of course, if you can't remember, is the Boise State upset of Oklahoma, featuring the three trick plays, including the Statue of Liberty, to win the game. Number two, an audio tape of Brent Musburger talking about AJ McCarron's girlfriend from the Alabama championship game.
So the best.
So good.
It gets better. Number three, the half Notre Dame, half Ohio State jersey worn by Laura Quinn Hawk at the Ohio State Notre Dame bowl game.
Oh, God.
Number four, a photo of Manti Te'o's fake girlfriend. Now, this will be the gray outline from like NBA 2K, you know, when Michael Jordan didn't give the rights to his name and you just saw the gray outline that said player. It'll be that outline and Manti Te'o's girlfriend. The original turnover chain. I debated between this or just a giant room full of all the turnover items. So
no, this is the OG, goes in on its own first.
All right, that's what I thought. Okay, a ticket stub from the 2011 Fiesta Bowl as proof that UConn football actually played in this game.
That's a rare piece of memorabilia. That's almost like a Honus Wagner 1910 baseball card.
It's hard to find, and you know, there are a lot of fakes. People don't, even when you see the real thing, people don't believe it's the real thing. You know, you have to have like an appraiser from Sotheby's come in and make sure. All right, some of these are serious, like this one, Vince Young's cleats from the 2006 Rose Bowl.
Perfect.
That's offense.
Texas Tech versus Baylor 2015 over betting stub, also known as the easiest over bet of all time.
Yeah, that was very, very easy.
It was also, at the time, the highest over-under I think ever recorded, and still the easiest bet ever.
Yeah, we're like, it's going over 100, like, with absolute 1,000% ease.
I think it went over 80 in the third quarter.
Correct.
So it was like a 79 over-under, which was just unheard of at the time. And I think we hit it, like, sometime with, like, 4 or 5 minutes in the third.
Yeah, with ease. As expected.
Along the same lines, a betting slip from the 2012 National Championship game, Alabama minus 14 over Notre Dame, the easiest single bet of all time.
That was like an exhibition game.
This one will be autographed by our friend Mike Roberts, who laughed hysterically and kept texting all of us. At that time, I hadn't heard from Mike Roberts in like 7 years, but he's just like texting me. He's like, you got to bet Alabama. Bet the house.
He was absolutely correct.
Yes. Next item, a bottle of Grey Goose purchased and drank by Maurice Clarett.
Pre-game bottle, thank you.
Pre-game, yeah. Oh, no. I mean, you can find a million of those bottles, but it's the ones he drank pre-game.
Real quick, I would like to say the next one.
Sure.
A bottle of Grey Goose purchased by Steve Sarkisian.
Also, oh.
Also on there. Okay, now Ed, you can go on the next one.
Oh, you mean new Tennessee offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian?
You know it.
It's interesting you bring that up. This was not planned, because the next item, Dan, Tennessee, probably not the best place for Sarkisian to go, given that the next item is a statue of the 2017 Tennessee-Virginia Tech game played at the NASCAR Stadium, made out of the 150,000 crushed beer cans that were delivered for that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See?
So that's the environment that new OC Steve Sarkisian is going into. Enjoy that.
Not good.
Next one. Ty Detmer's Heisman Trophy.
Hmm.
Much along the lines of the UConn Fiesta Bowl ticket, we have to have this as as a memory that it happened. Next one. A Jim Tressel-themed tattoo.
Hmm.
A lot of possibility there. The next one, only like four people are going to like this, but it's us three. And then like Kevin Mahoney, the Kirby Dardar fan club banner that hung in the Carrier Dome in Syracuse from what, like 96 to 98.
That was A+. That really is so genius. Good. Genius.
That's a personal favorite. A pom-pom from the original Penn State whiteout game in 2005 when they beat Ohio State. And the final one, a copy of NCAA Football 93 for Sega Genesis, the greatest college football game and system ever made.
I like that one, Tom.
What am I forgetting?
No, this is endless, but these are all fantastic.
I think there's quite enough to make an inaugural class, and then this will go on probably forever. We'll probably be 90 years old and be like, Tua's jersey. Remember that guy?
So good. Looking forward to next week to talk about that.
Yeah. And then, well, actually, by that point, we'll be like, well, Tua Tagovailoa was pretty good. But you know who was real good was Tulia Tagovailoa. Is that his name? His brother? Is it like Talia Tagovailoa?
Yeah.
Talia, I think, or Tulia. Yeah.
No clue.
I don't know. Based on my knowledge and my own family, the younger brothers are always the best.
Correct.
Yes.
If the younger brother's not better, then the older brother did not do his job as the older brother.
That's right. So good luck everyone playing Alabama, because if you thought Tua was good, the guy who had to play above his age against Tua is coming next.
And he's right-handed.
Yeah. So obviously, he's not as good in that regard, but otherwise he's great. All right. What else, guys? We've managed to take a show about one game and turn it into like an hour and 10-minute podcast.
As expected. Not much.
I'm going to do a whole bunch of ayahuasca this weekend, Tom.
Yeah.
I got locked into a marathon on New Year's Day watching it, and it's just too tempting. Got to do it.
Come back for next week's pod. Don't get too lost down the rabbit hole.
We'll see. Mother Earth is speaking to me. I have to listen to her.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, for those who don't know what we're talking about, consult your local cable channel guide and go to Vice and check out the Kentucky Ayahuasca show, where people go to this guy's house who's missing a tooth, but he seems all right. And they do ayahuasca for 3 days, and they have a spiritual awakening. And I think next year, whoever loses the college bowl picks on Take the Points is doing ayahuasca before the national title game. So I'm ready to pony up. So, yeah, I guess that's it for this week. And then we'll do a little fun recap next week. And then say we'll do an off-season pod and then won't do one. And
no chance. No, I'm having a kid in February, so there's 0% chance of that this year. I'm not even going to tease people with that option. But we'll be back next week. Next week, we will recap the national championship game. And we will pick some Hall of Fame inductees from the list we just read. That's going to be an interesting debate, I think, because there's not a lot of spots and there's a lot of nominees, and we have passionate, passionate feelings about all of them. So,
and speaking of passionate Hall of Fame feelings, Tom, next week we're finally going to also have our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame conversation. We've been teasing it for 2 months. I'm ready to have that conversation. So next week we're going to do dual Hall of Fames.
Okay. It's all Hall of Fame all the time next week then.
That's right.
All right. Good night, folks.